We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News, as always. I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. This podcast is, of course, made possible by the continued stupidity and poor choicery of politicians. Without them constantly fucking up, I wouldn't have options for bullshit to spin into oral gold for listeners like yourselves. Like some sort of podcasting Rumpelstiltskin. As well as the generous support of loyal viewers, listeners, and any other sense that you choose to indulge this podcast in. I don't know what the collective word sniffers, if you're using only your nose to absorb this podcast somehow. Whatever it is, however you absorb this podcast, thank you. If you'd like to be more loyal than a loyal listener, you can scoot on over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Matt Harvey Stuff and feel free to sign up to one of the tiers. You'll also get bonus content if you go over and get some of that there. Now, of course, I wouldn't expect you guys to do it alone. That would be an outrageous and unacceptable ask. So this episode is, of course, brought to you by our major sponsor, The Taint. You know it. You fear it. The week between Christmas and New Year, affectionately known as The Taint, because it taint one thing and it taint the other. Is it a weekday? Is it a holiday? Are you allowed to drink at 11 a.m. or is that still considered a cry for help? No one really knows. That's The Taint. In The Taint, time has no meaning. Emails are sent but never read. Pants are optional. Every meal is leftovers eaten directly from a container that you don't remember owning. The Taint is when your body is full of ham, your soul is full of regret, and your calendar just says, huh? All in caps, bold text, every day. Workplaces remain technically open, but spiritually abandoned. Gyms are mostly closed, government departments are on vibes-only mode. And every conversation starts with, wait, what day is it today? So this year, don't fight it. Sink in. Embrace. The Taint. The Taint. Not Christmas. Not New Year. Just sort of floating, you know? Like society's loading screen. The Taint. Don't look now, but you're already in it. And of course, guys, of course, I wouldn't be able to do this, and nor would I really need to, without my live shows. We're heading into 2026, which is crazy. Heading into 2026. And so I'm starting a fresh tour, a new tour, a brand new show that I'll be taking to places all around Australia, starting in Bendigo for the Bendigo Mini Comedy Festival, which is basically just like a work in progress show. You can go see some of the shows that will actually be at the Melbourne Comedy Festival in their infancy while people are still figuring some of it out. I'll be performing on January 16th. It is, like I said, a work in progress show, and it is a kind of pay what you want option. So you can just show up, see how you're feeling on the day, or if you want to grab a ticket in advance, we've got a number of tiers that you can pay, sort of whatever works for your budget. Then I'll be moving over to Adelaide for the Adelaide Fringe Festival, where I'll be performing at the Piglet in Gluttony from March 10th till 15th, and then in the Melbourne International Comedy Festival from March 26th through to April 19th. So almost all of the festival, it's every Thursday to Monday. That's Thursday to Monday. So no Tuesdays, no Wednesdays. Thursday to Monday. Doing my brand new show, all of those, doing my brand new show, Jokes About the Time I Got Detained in America and Other Stories. So I'd love to see you there. I'd love for you to come check it out. Should be a good time. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So let's get into the headlines. The Defense Department has obtained a number of Israeli-made Smash 3000 targeting gun sights and is currently testing them for use by the Australian Defence Force. The Smash 3000 is a rifle-mounted electro-optical fire control system with a kind of ridiculous, ostentatious name that you'd expect to find in a men's deodorant package. Ooh, do you stink? The Smash 3000 will take care of that. In other words, it's a high-tech AI-assisted electronic gun sight being fitted onto a weapon of death. On the plus side, though, is that AI is so bad at recognizing basic human shapes that these weapons will never be able to recognize a person, let alone lock onto one, targeting them with a weapon of death. So realistically, these might become the safest weapons of mass death ever created. So, yay! Hamilton Island has been sold to Blackstone, a US private equity firm which owns the casino hotel chain Crown Resorts, reportedly for around $1.2 billion. Though people have expressed concerns about the owners of Crown owning Hamilton Island, especially as it seems the island's new slogan will be Sun, Sand, and Synergy. Blackstone has, however, promised to keep the island authentically Australian by ensuring that it will price ordinary Australians out of any type of visit and that a week there will be less affordable than an entire month in Bali. Netflix is laying the foundation for its deal to buy Warner Brothers Discovery Studios and HBO Max streaming service, securing up to $25 billion in bank financing to fund the buyout. Netflix has assured customers the consistency of HBO programming will continue after the acquisition by creating prestige television that has terrible rushed final seasons and a finale that people will get furious about after six very excellent seasons. As a sign of commitment to the HBO model, they've agreed to actually change the name to HBO Max, then to Netflix Max, Netflix HBO Max, to HBO Max Netflix, then to Max Netflix HBO, then eventually rename it back to Netflix in 5 years' time. The acquisition of Warner Brothers' back catalogue, including all of the Harry Potter films, is in complete alignment with Netflix's broadcasting philosophy, that of unquestioningly platforming anti-trans creators, which will now have some new categories, including HBO Originals, Max Originals, future IP for theme park rides, that's an important one. Didn't quite land the ending, but otherwise pretty good. The Wizarding World of Troubled Transphobic Creators. Esoteric Weird Shit. They say this is a comedy, but I'm 5 episodes in and I'm confused, bored, and want to know if I should watch something else with the precious little time that I have left on Earth. This one's a pretty big category, but it's different from person to person. Then there's Stuff Your Friends Won't Shut Up About, but you'll never get around to watching, so just learn the talking points and move on with your life. Ooh, there's the one that was groundbreaking in a really specific time period because it did something interesting, but then everything since then has referenced it, but slightly better, and now it feels really dated. And of course, everyone's favourite, well-made, genre-bending, thought-provoking, but the main message will be misinterpreted by a general populace that turned into a hate movement or the language that they use to speak to each other in code. That one is increasingly becoming a large category, but hey, still pretty good. Still pretty good. Following expense scandals involving ministers Annika Wells and Michelle Rowland, Anthony Albanese has announced a raft of changes to parliamentarians' travel rules. Changes include restricting the travel of federal politicians to economy class flight and scrapping an allowance for 3 annual Australia-wide return trips. Previously, Albanese had defended the spending of $100,000 on Wells' trip, saying ministers spent so little of their own money on things, they actually have no idea how much things cost. But even with the new ministerial changes in place, welfare recipients will still be audited if caught buying name-brand bread. After all, it's only abuse of taxpayers' funds if it's poor people doing it. Imagine being so out of touch that you think that a $100,000 trip to New York is above board, but still allow Centrelink to continue to hunt single mothers like they're Bin Laden. New South Wales Prime Minister Chris Minns says in the wake of the Bondi Beach attack some of the tougher laws on guns and protests will go into effect immediately. The New South Wales government said it's not done with reform, as sweeping new laws come into effect after being approved by the New South Wales Parliament. The new laws will rush through Parliament on the assumption that democracy would catch up later. Despite giving police the power to enact a blanket refusal of all public assemblies for up to 3 months, Minns says the laws won't affect protests, unless of course you plan on having one. Hypothetically, people are still free to protest, provided that they don't actually do it. There is no worse way to find out how restricted your freedoms are than by trying to exert them. Minns went on to say that democracy is not on hold, but has been streamlined for efficiency. IRS agents will have to watch OnlyFans content in order to determine if the content meets the no tax on tips laws. I think the word have to is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. Upon hearing this announcement, Google searches for how to become IRS agent were up 1,000% in males aged every demographic, every single demographic. An IRS spokesman confirms some Americans are about to be audited. Hard. Extremely hard, if you know what I mean. That story again. Trump's no tax on tips policy forces the IRS to decide what really constitutes as just the tip. Miss Rachel, a social media sensation who creates content for toddlers, was named a top 10 finalist for Stop Anti-Semitism's Anti-Semite of the Year Award for being an advocate for Palestinian children amid the Gaza War. Yeah, it turns out advocating for children is now considered a gateway to dangerous ideologies like empathy. To be fair, I mean, we can't have Miss Rachel radicalizing toddlers with things like basic human decency. Where would we be then? I don't know if you've heard her updated version of Wheels on the Bus. It goes something like this. The wheels on the bus get drone struck, drone struck, drone struck. The wheels on the bus get drone struck all through the remains of what used to be the town. That's the end of the headlines, my friends, and now we're going to move on to the bigger news, starting with mass shooting news. Yeah, sorry, so this was kind of inevitable. This is a topical podcast, and this is a thing that happened, and as a news podcast, you are beholden to the important things that happen in the news. And by now, you've all undoubtedly heard about the mass shooting on Bondi Beach. And I can't say that Bondi Beach hasn't been a point of cultural cringe for many Australians, but a mass shooting is no way to handle societal issues unless you're going to shoot up the head office of Raytheon or Halliburton. That might work for some of us, but even then, I feel like you get people pushing back against that. And even then, let's be honest, for those two offices, a drone strike would probably be more appropriate, but I digress. A mass shooting is such a rare event in Australia, rarer even than hearing us openly admit Russell Crowe is actually from New Zealand, but shh, don't tell them. For those whose birth years start with a 2, the last major mass shooting was in Tasmania and was responsible for the only good thing a coalition government has ever done for Australia, outside of Harold Holt, who, remember, removed a Liberal Party member from the Prime Ministership by being too horny to swim between the flags. Look it up, that's a true thing. That being the gun laws. Howard accidentally stumbled into good policy like a man tripping into a fire exit full of cupcakes. But when one does happen, Americans do very helpfully rush online to send us thoughts and prayers. Those thoughts often take the shape of, see, it happens there as well, despite America having had more mass shootings than there are days of the year this year alone. So far, we have at least a week of the year, you know, the taint, we have the taint of the year left before we're done, before we're into 2026, so they can still beat their own record. Because nothing says national trauma like America's trying to gunsplain mass shooting to us. Which brings us back to the point where mass shootings are the latest in American culture war garbage that is being imported into Australia. This is something that can stay strictly offshore, if I'm being completely honest with you. The only thing America exports more reliably than mass shootings is the explanation for why they're unavoidable. After the attack that killed 15 people, Australia is now questioning the effectiveness of laws that have become a point of national pride, brought in by eyebrow-given sentient form, John Howard. I shouldn't be too mean. To his one and only credit, John Howard's gun laws have saved countless lives. And it is in that spirit that the current Prime Minister acted, and acted fast, as Albo declared his intention to strengthen Australia's gun laws. And good on him! Good work, Albo. I believe that this is the sort of action that we need. It's decisive. It is quick. After the announcement, Howard, he must have been feeling threatened, as the coalition then rolled him out of his cryo sleep, where he dreams of kicking refugee puppy immigrants with impunity, to milk the one thing that he did well by explaining to the populace which crisis actually deserves the attention and which is dismissible. Calling the push to tighten gun laws in the wake of the Bondi attack an attempted diversion. Seems they thought him out much like a conservative Captain America, complete with the opinions of a Captain America from the actual 40s. You can see him emerging from his slumber, sort of like, what year is it? Are Muslims still the problem? No? Well, can we make them a problem again? Looks like someone remembered to take his grumpy out-of-touch cunt pills this morning. As Howard blasted the government for not acting strongly enough to combat anti-Semitism since October 2023. You can tell that Howard is getting old because he can't help but piss all over the one outlet of goodwill that this world has for him, sometimes as many as two or three times a night. He really should see a doctor for that. Seems like there's something wrong. The comments come as state and territory leaders agree to strong and focused action to reform Australia's gun laws by limiting the number of guns allowed to be owned by individuals, the types of guns deemed legal in Australia, and making citizenship a prerequisite for holding a gun license. But someone went and wound up the old culture war scarecrow and released him on Sky News, where he said of Anthony Albanese, "Now, I'm not going to malign his character and everything, but he's let the Jewish community down on this simply by not enthusiastically and energetically denouncing anti-Semitism." The day that Howard finally dies will be great for moving this country forward. For example, Howard welcomed a tightening of the current laws so long as it did not distract from action on anti-Semitism. And this seems like an unnecessary detail to add on. Obviously, we don't want anti-Semitism in this country, and it's not like we're doing nothing about it. Look at Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke, who recently declared that hate preachers and neo-Nazis spreading misinformation and radicalisation in Australia will face faster visa cancellations and deportations. See, we are handling things, kind of, mostly, in our own way. As long as we don't fall into hyperbole and demonizing groups who have nothing to do with this issue at all, and cue all of the outrage in 3, 2, 1, there we go.
The idea you can secure any large group of people, you know, in a country like Australia, the United States, or others, it's just not possible. We have to get them left of Boone, left of the attack before they do it, infiltrate their networks, find their funders, and start rounding them up.
Fuck me. Blaming mass shootings on peace activists is a bold strategy. There is nothing like defending against anti-Semitism, like talking about rounding people up and putting them away. Wow, that escalated quickly from safety to 1939. So fast, so very fast. It's more tone deaf than Beethoven. Nothing screams, "We've learned nothing from history," like suggesting camps as a solution again. But you know what? That was America. There was an American news program speaking out of turn about an issue that happened here, so surely it'll be better here. in the land of sensible gun reform, is what I thought, until Pauline Hanson opened her gaping maw and unleashed a torrent of idiocy from the void within, saying, the Prime Minister never heeded the warning signs, including the weekly anti-Semitic protests across our nation, hate speech from certain religious clerics, our obnoxious universities, and probable terrorist alert. I stand with Australia's Jewish community, who tonight deserve our absolute solace. You have the same right to live in peace and harmony as all Australians. Authorities must be honest when revealing the identities and backgrounds of these murderers. Whew! That was a lot. That was a lot of Pauline Hanson, and I apologise for exposing you to so much. Pauline Hanson, just take a second to breathe. There you go. Let it out. Pauline Hanson has seized the opportunity to use the nation's tragedy as a fresh chance to be the same old kind of cunt. She wants transparency so long as it only reveals the brown people that she currently doesn't like. Pauline Hanson demanding facts is as likely as Clive Palmer demanding a salad or offering to pay his employees properly, which leaves the gun reform debate in a precarious position of being hijacked by Olympic-level whataboutism. How dare a discussion about gun reform exist while other bad things have ever happened? Of course, sorry, how dare a discussion about gun reform exist while other bad things have ever happened ever in the history of ever? As the nation is told again and again to stop fixating on guns and start fixating on the correct moral panic, which was, of course, to focus on Muslims and migration. Classic scapegoating right there. It's good to see that we haven't changed the game. Netanyahu, the Israeli Pauline Hanson, linked the shooting to Australia's recognition of the Palestinian state. Wow, and I thought Howard was bad at turning an issue onto something that wasn't relevant. Prompting cries of, oh, we need to end migration all across the country. Well, all across very limited sections of very white parts of the country. But a lot of the people saying this shit are people who have adopted an ideology and national personality from a historically dangerous and questionable foreign regime, so obviously migration is the first thing that they're concerned about. The weirder part is that a bunch of these people who immediately jumped onto being angry at Muslims over the Bondi shooting conveniently forgot about the Muslim man who disarmed one of the shooters. Anthony Albanese did announce that sweeping reforms will be designed to clamp down on anti-Semitism in the wake of the terror attack. The reforms will hopefully start simply by stopping the sale of parts for the weapons that the Israeli government used to bomb the civilians of Gaza that has, if we're being completely honest, really been bad for Israel's international reputation. But hey, that's just between us. On top of this, National Cabinet has agreed unanimously to strengthen Australia's strict gun laws, because apparently our At Least We're Not America is not a gun... Because apparently our standing, hey, At Least We're Not America policy is actually not a gun policy. Because apparently it turns out that our At Least We're Not America standing policy is not a real gun policy and hasn't been getting the job done. It only took the second largest mass shooting in Australian history to bring politicians together on something that doesn't directly benefit them financially. The proposed legislation includes aggravated hate speech offences for preachers and leaders who promote violence, increased penalties for hate speech promoting violence, making hate an aggravating factor in sentencing crime for online threats and harassment, developing a regime for listing organisations whose leaders engage in hate speech, promoting violence or racial hatred, developing a narrow federal offence for serious vilification based on race and or advocating racial supremacy. But the first measures that we know definitely going onto the cards will be a gun buyback scheme. That's right, we've done it! Choo-choo-choom! We are repeating history! And that's not to say that this is a bad thing, this is actually a great idea. It's just, Do we not, like, do multiple things at once? Anyway, the Albanese government will introduce legislation for a gun buyback scheme, which will be jointly funded by the states and federal government. But how will we pay for all this when we can't afford to pay Centrelink recipients an amount of money that will take them above poverty wages, you might be asking? That's a good question. Simple. We will pay the gun buyback scheme by selling all of those guns to America. America's ongoing national breakdown will probably help us out in this situation. Australia's weapons will be rehomed with loving, lightly regulated families. This is a vital habit to keep us from becoming more like America. And the PM has assured us that while hundreds of thousands of guns will go, the culture wars will remain. So don't worry, guys, we got you. But to be honest, like, this is just the tip of the iceberg. I am not convinced that this will be nearly enough. It is clear that the gun laws have a very specific intention: reduce the amount of bullets that a person can shoot in quick succession, which is a noble goal. So it is clear to me how this should manifest ultimately. If we are keeping guns in the populace, then the only guns that we're allowed to own are colonial muskets. The old school, you know, ones that you've got to pack with the black powder and then put the ball in and then tamp it down, right? Maximum 3 shots a minute. And that's only if you're good at it. But truly, truly, if we want to make change, I can see two things in direct clash with each other. There are a lot of shooters, farmers, and hunters who say it's not the guns, it's the immigration that's the problem. A scapegoat that's as old as time. Immigrants. People coming here not respecting the local way of life, not integrating into local culture. So, to help the hunters who need to hunt for their safety and for their way of life, we will go back to the old ways. The old ways. No, the old ways. Full integration into native hunting style. No more guns. Only hunting with boomerangs and spears. So we're going to offer up a new trade-in scheme. You'll get as many boomerangs and spears as the value of your gun will afford. Government-funded lessons on how to use them properly will come in handy, and 40,000 years of hunting this way has proved that it can be done. We wouldn't want to be contradictory now, would we? We couldn't criticize people for not integrating into the local way and then ourselves not be integrating into the local way. That'd be weapons grade level hypocrisy. Because if the argument is respect Australian culture, then congratulations. This is what Australian culture actually looks like. Moving on now, it's secret government news. Anthony Albanese has fast grown a reputation for running the most secretive government in Australian history, surpassing the Morrison government, who you might recall Morrison from putting forward an ineffective anti-corruption model as the federal government's preferred scheme, who used cabinet confidentiality to deny freedom of information scheme requests that ensured truly important information never saw the light of day, and quite famously appointed himself to 5 ministerial portfolios without the knowledge of his own cabinet and proceeded to do none of the work. Less cabinet reshuffle and more a mental health episode, really, as he splits himself into 6 different personalities with 6 different jobs. Well, 1 different personality with 6 different jobs. Maybe if I'd give myself 5 extra unnecessary jobs, I'd also be overwhelmed into a frozen panic like a rabbit staring down a headlight of a car that I was also driving. But Albanese has outdone even himself in making things more secret than ever, as the PM's office directed lobbyists to use encrypted disappearing messages and verbal briefings when proposing policy ideas to avoid freedom of information and disclosure requirements, which, to be fair, is saving us a shit ton of money, because they spend hours and hours and thousands of taxpayer dollars delaying and redacting the very messages that lobbyists send so that we won't know what they're up to. So before I really get into this, I would just like to thank Albo for saving us that time and money. Thank you, genuinely. In some cases, government staffers explicitly suggested using disappearing messages so that they couldn't be captured by departmental record-keeping systems. Apparently, this practice of placing key policy documents beyond the reach of Freedom of Information laws may be unlawful, which frankly is a bigger red flag than a Chinese parade. So, that's no way to run a government, guys. That's a drug dealer's business model. If they were still making new seasons of The Wire, we'd be seeing a season of like an aging McNulty trying to get them to build a backdoor into Signal so that they could spy on Marlowe's crew's group chats before they disappeared. Sources say they were also told to use direct phone calls where possible when discussing business before the government. When communicating via email, they were told to include as little detail as possible. One lobbyist described the instructions as routine, almost procedural. One former Morrison government staffer observed, "The major difference between us and them is that we used WhatsApp and they use Signal," which, wow, like what the fuck, guys? What the actual fuck? This is the iPhone versus Android debate, but for avoiding accountability, and we don't need this sort of bullshit. One lobbyist who received the informal advice explained the system like this. "The government has demonstrated a willingness to consult widely on contentious reforms, including issues like gambling advertising, and that's to its credit. The difficulty with that broad consultation is that it produces an extensive written record, which creates opportunities for outside actors to pursue through FOI requests. The informal shift to encrypted or disappearing messages is definitely an attempt to limit that vulnerability." Ah, yes, democracy. But make it Snapchat, you know? If sunlight is a vulnerability, then you're not a Democrat, you're a vampire. I believe the unofficial rules is that if it disappears in 24 hours, legally it never existed. You know, just like a ministerial controversy in a news cycle. The shift coincides with a marked tightening inside ministerial offices around written communication, with multiple sources reporting a growing aversion from ministerial advisors to receiving anything that could be later be subject to an FOI request. It comes as the government continues to push a contentious overhaul of the FOI regime that critics say will further erode transparency. So I must apologise. I have been saying for years that we learned nothing from RoboDebt. But I was wrong. Seems that we learned how to hide our national shame better. We learned plausible deniability is a great shield, which, to be fair, has been Australia's number one lesson across its whitest of white histories. One stakeholder described how a meeting he attended was followed by a verbal summary rather than a written summary sent via email, and that has happened on other occasions. It's never a good sign when people start switching to verbal contact only. So here's a little personal anecdote. I had this happen with an old job who tried to gaslight me into thinking that they didn't owe me any workers' comp after I got injured there. We'd been emailing for a long while, and at a certain point they refused to email me anymore, instead insisting that we speak on the phone as it would be faster, and certainly not because at that point there would be no admissible record of our communications. So remember, kids, always email your questions to your workplace. The more questionable they are, the more you need to email them. This is a very important lesson you need to learn. This is the HR version of no witnesses. They're treating emails like asbestos. Don't let anybody know that they exist. As the report makes clear, Commonwealth departments and agencies are struggling to meet their statutory duties in an environment where information is created, shared, and destroyed outside traditional systems. Persistent failures in record keeping have been reportedly highlighted by royal commissions, Australian National Audit Office audits, and surveys by the National Archives of Australia. The National Archive is now just a group chat titled, "What They Don't Know Won't Hurt Us." Overall, the report found 73% of Commonwealth departments and agencies now permit messaging apps for official business. And among those that do, 75% prefer Signal. Even in agencies without a formal proposition, 84% acknowledge staff were likely using these apps for government work. And of course, you wouldn't know, would you? Because there's no record of it, so how could you possibly have concrete numbers for everything? But whew, it's quite frustrating, guys. The safeguards around this shift are almost non-existent. Of the agencies that had policies, only two addressed FOI search requirements. Only two dealt with risk surrounding disappearing messages that the OAIC says may lead to the unlawful destruction of Commonwealth records. According to the report, only one Commonwealth agency explained how messages should be captured and then archived for future reference. Most agencies, the report found, do not require staff to use official accounts or devices, meaning official business is routinely conducted on private phones. The report warned that this combination of widespread adoption and inadequate policy is already eroding FOI, privacy, and record-keeping obligations. A governance failure that mirrors and amplifies the off-the-books practices now being encouraged inside ministerial offices. Critics say this undermines not only the FOI system, but the broader integrity architecture built after the establishment of the National Anti-Corruption Commission in 2023. Because look at them, they're doing such a bang-up job of keeping us safe. I can see why you'd want to hide from them. I mean, that Paul Brereton guy, he might refuse to investigate you on no reasonable grounds whatsoever, and then what are you gonna do, huh? Then who's gonna stop you? Fortunately, the coalition, which is a weird thing to say, Greens and Independent Senators David Pocock and Jackie Lambie united to reject a government majority Senate committee report that urged the passage of controversial changes to current FOI laws. It is genuinely a concern when we are at the place where we find ourselves thanking the coalition for their childish, contrarian political antics. Oh, if they want it, then we don't want it, even if we would have done the same thing. Which, it's just a horrible way to run a business, or run a government, I should say, although they are running it like it's a business. Anyway, it's a terrible way to do it, but when that is the only thing that is saving us, you know we're in trouble. The Freedom of Information Amendment Bill 2025 represents the most significant retrenchment of transparency since the current Freedom of Information Act was passed in 1982. We might as well call it the John Cena Act, because if it passes, you can request some, but you will not see it. I've talked about this before, but for new listeners and to refresh old listeners, the bill would impose a strict 40-hour cap on processing times for FOI requests, expand the grounds on which agencies can refuse applications, and give departments greater direction to deem requests vexatious or unreasonable. The Australia Institute's Bill Brown disputes the idea that fraud requests are overwhelming the system or forcing the exposure of material never intended to be public, arguing that the existing FOI framework already gives agencies wide leeway to prevent the disclosure of sensitive material to the public. Brown rejects the implication that the problem lies with the applications rather than with the design of the system, Far from addressing long-standing flaws in the FOI administration, Brown says the Albanese government has missed an opportunity to make good faith reforms. When Anthony Albanese delivered his third vision statement as opposition leader in December 2029 titled Labour and Democracy, he said, Labour stood with Australia's journalists and the Right to Know coalition in their united campaign to defend and strengthen press freedom. Do we have a clip of that?
Journalism is not a crime. It's essential to preserving our democracy. We don't need a culture of secrecy. We need a culture of disclosure. Protect whistleblowers, expand their protections and the public interest test. Reform freedom of information laws so they can't be flouted as they have been by this government. The current delays, obstacles, costs and exemptions make it easier for the government to hide information from the public than to actually give it out. That is just not right. We must bring in stronger protections for public interest journalism. Don't prosecute journalists for just doing their jobs. We need to enshrine in law the changes required to protect press freedom.
Well, it seems like that clip has aged like milk in the sun. You don't govern in the national interest if you're under a shroud of secrecy. The thing that he isn't realizing is that Telegram, Signal, and these other end-to-end encrypted apps aren't as safe as people think. The messages might not be able to be hacked, but the accounts can be. Then the messages just can be read and screenshot and sent everywhere. And hackers, tell you this, I don't know if you know much about hackers, they love to hack. Most of them love to do it so much that they do it in their spare time for funsies. And I'm not actively encouraging hackers to do this. I wouldn't do that. You shouldn't be hacking anything, and certainly not anything that will give us insight into the questionable relationships between politicians and lobbyists. That'd be bad. That'd be illegal. Don't do that. But if you do that, don't keep it to yourself. Tell some of us, because we'd like to know. We call that doing your civic duty. You're saving us a shitload of taxpayer money by hacking into Telegram and getting all those messages. Why waste time hiding things when you can just never create a record? Moving on now, it's social media news. Australia just introduced the world's first social media ban for under 16s. But new developments mean it isn't just under 16-year-olds who are having issues with social media. Any Australian foolish enough to be looking to enter the United States is potentially going to come up against a different kind of social media issue, as dumpster fire given life by the worst magical fairy in history, Donald Trump, has declared that visitors to the United States will have to reveal all social media activity over the past 5 years. Years that we here on Australian social media have been calling the thank fuck we're not America years, which doesn't bode well for anybody attempting to enter the country anytime soon. Normally when you travel, you encounter Australians like you encounter pigeons in every major city annoying the locals. But now, Australians are abandoning travel to the US and boycotting World Cup matches there next year. Sure, a bunch of people will definitely still go, and they will get in, but that's mostly because their social media looks less like a social media account and more like a fetish account for the licking the boots and kissing the ass of Trump. But it's not just us. The US Customs and Border Protection Agency said tourists from 42 countries would have to reveal all of their social media activity over the past 5 years. Under the new rules, which are up for a 60-day review before coming into effect. Yeah, you heard that right. The nation that not only invented social media but mastered the act of psychologically damaging everyone who ever encountered it and also inspired QAnon has announced a plan to screen people's social media for hostile online behavior. Isn't that rich? The country that invented every company that ever stole your data says that they're worried about what you've been doing online. which admittedly, they set the precedent. It's the same reason that Australia is so scared of boat people. We set the tone for poor behaviour in that department. The rules were drawn up in response to an executive order made by Donald Trump on the day of his inauguration in January, which purported to protect the US from visitors, instructing that visas should be denied to anyone with hostile attitudes towards its citizens, culture, government, institutions, or founding principles. Some of these sacred American institutions will include hamburgers, flags in front yards, school shootings, terrible healthcare, invading countries to find WMDs, and funding Israel. There are even rumors that the US will refuse entry to any visitor who was discovered liking a tweet criticizing the Cheesecake Factory or still calling a tweet a tweet. Border officials will collect face, fingerprint, DNA, and iris biometrics, as well as names, addresses, places, and dates of birth of family members, and high-value data, including all telephone numbers visitors have held over the same time, as well as email addresses for the past decade. The past decade? Fuck. I don't think you need to go that far back into my emails, guys. This means you'll be taking data and checking the email address that we all created in high school and then have held on to because we use it to sign up to questionable websites that we aren't sure that we can trust just yet. You know the one. You've all got the one. There's absolutely nothing valuable in those email addresses. It's all communications from teenagers in the early 2000s and emails for 50% off some sort of dick pill because you can't have an email address since 2002 and not have it be stolen in an online data breach at some point and then signed up to online dick pills. It's ambitious to think that anyone's email address contains anything that anyone would call high value data. In 2019, more than 100,000 Australians would regularly arrive in the US each month. That figure is now consistently in the low 50,000s. In November, it fell to just 45,408, which is 11% lower than the same month last year. Pretty clear, should these rules come through, tourism numbers will immediately drop to zero, as it's impossible to find an Australian who hasn't had a negative opinion of America and is actually willing to leave the country. Ironically, the ones who love it the most are the ones who would happily never own a passport because, according to them, they live in the greatest country in the world, so why would they need to go anywhere else? You know what I mean? Besides, there are all sorts of foreigners and these like weird foreign food out there, and they can't even get a meat pie if they go to America. Oh, it's easier to just stay home. You know the type. Under the new rules, border authorities will demand a range of information when visitors apply for a visa waiver under the automated ESTAR system, which will move to an app-only process rather than a website. Customs agents will ask travellers to declare fruit if they are a terrorist or if at any time they called America a failure or if they called Trump an orange dictator online. If more people listen to this podcast, then I might be at risk of being detained again, which you can hear all about in my upcoming show, The Time I Got Detained, jokes about the time that I got detained in America and other stories. But being under the radar in this case, being an under the radar indie comedian might just work in my favor. Who knows? At this rate, the only Australians who will be allowed into America will be Disney adults. Because border security will struggle to comb through 5 years of posts about Disney remakes and how much they love visiting the Magical Kingdom. And they'll probably drop dead before they finish the 5 years. Moving on now, it is war news. Seeing as I am already not going to the US anytime soon, might as well double down with another story about how the US is a failing country and doing something absolutely stupid. They've reached back into their old playbook and declared that they will declare war on an oil-rich country. But which one will it be? Oh, Venezuela! Yeah, all right. I wasn't expecting that. Okay. Venezuela it is. As the Trump top aides refuse to rule out a war with Venezuela. And as a result, President Nicolas Maduro has been ordering the Venezuelan Navy to escort oil tankers after the seizure by US forces. A majority of Americans oppose military action in Venezuela, though a bunch of them do support military action in their own cities, so it's hard to take them seriously. But Trump declined to get into specifics when asked what his ultimate goals were for Caracas, the Venezuelan capital, saying of Nicolas Maduro, "He knows exactly what I want. He knows better than anybody." And let's not pretend we don't all know what Trump wants as well. Sycophancy, an endless parade of lick spittles and impunity for his corruption, and also money, and for people to like him, despite, you know, his whole personality. The president has applied more pressure on Venezuela in recent days, describing plans to classify Maduro's government as a foreign terrorist organization. And to be fair, that has worked quite well for them in the past. You know, slap the terrorist label on something, and people's willingness to look the other way while you fund their enemies and genocide the shit out of them increases exponentially. It's the CIA's whole playbook at this point. We're just lucky that they hadn't figured that out yet when they were getting rid of Gott Whitlam. For, you know, being the coolest prime minister who ever prime ministered. Or history would probably have a very different view of the Whitlam administration. And when the Whitlams blow up the Pokies started, it wouldn't have been considered the 84th most Australian song ever written, according to Triple M, and they would know. It'd be considered a manifesto praising terror. In early December, the US seized a Venezuelan oil tanker and blew up a number of offshore boats, presenting the country's growing military operations against Venezuela as a war against drug trafficking and terrorism, even designating the government of Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro, as a foreign terrorist organization. The first country to ever receive that designation. Despite America's best efforts to be that country by continuously dropping in places unannounced like a house guest with no social skills who was just in the area, or a nosy neighbor who thought they heard a noise and is just coming by to make sure that you're okay. Are you okay? How's your oil? We need to make sure your oil is okay. I mean that you're okay. Trump claims that they are a drug producer despite things like reality and evidence. The New York Times reported that Venezuela is not a drug producer, and the cocaine that transits through the country and the waters around it generally is bound for Europe. See, real fucking nosy neighbor energy going on here. The one who sets up their neighborhood watch and is constantly posting in the neighborhood app, that's the energy that America is giving right now.
I saw one of the kids driving the boat. They had hoodies and a real, like, gangster aesthetic. Watch out, people!
You know, the kind of person who described kids in matching basketball uniforms as wearing gang colors. For a man who claimed as president he wouldn't start any wars, he has gone out of his way to get some new ones started, both civil and international. He has started more actual wars than the fictional ones that he claimed to have ended. A war in Venezuela is going to be like if the Iraq and Vietnam wars had a bastard child. You might remember Iraq and Vietnam as the two wars America lost that were started based on lies that led together to the deaths of 62,744 Americans. Though Trump has proven time and again the deaths of Americans has never been a concern of his and would not stop him from doing whatever the fuck he wants. If he were concerned about Americans dying, he would never have become president in the first place, you see? And Trump hates Europe, so going to war to stop drugs getting into Europe isn't really his style. He doesn't do international friendships unless those friends are dictators who can give him money. Some of Trump's key advisors, including Secretary of State Marco Rubio, are pushing for Maduro's removal as a means of adding to pressure to a communist government of Cuba. And some of you might know this already, or you might be young enough that this is your first America messing in the political affairs of other countries, in which case, congratulations on reaching that canon event in your lifestyle. But sorry to tell you, this is far from their first run around this particular block. Though, admittedly, especially in South America, they are usually much quieter about going to war with one of their countries or overthrowing one of their governments. You don't get to keep the resources of a country that you overthrow in secret. I mean, look at Australia, right? They got no resources from ousting the Whitlam government, but we sure don't talk about closing Pine Gap anymore, do we? So, get the troops ready for jungle warfare. We will inevitably be following America into another unjust war in a foreign country in our everlasting search for resources, while continuing to actively deny investment into renewable energies. If only we'd bothered to invest in renewables 20 years ago, we would avoid this whole thing. Instead, America would have invaded us for our renewable power, and we'd become the 51st state. We'd call us, I don't know, New California, the actual Sunshine State. And finally, it is age verification news! As mentioned above, the social media ban is here, and teens across the country are, as expected, finding ways around the ban immediately.
Can I have a show of hands to show us how many people received that message from the social media platforms? Okay, that's all. That's everybody that's under 16. Has anybody not received the message yet? Okay, you're under 16, you're under 16, you're under 16.
Having watched that clip, doesn't it just feel like he's pointing at them like he's also snitching on them at the same time? It feels like right after the interview, he's going to send that footage to all the social media companies and snitch on them. That's real, it's real snitch energy going on. And not even like for a reward, but just because he thinks that's his civic duty to snitch on these kids. Look, man, snitching is bad enough, but if you're doing it for like the right reasons or for a reward when you're desperate, we might overlook it. But a hobbyist snitcher? A civic-minded goody-two-shoes who can't mind their own fucking business? Yuck. Gross. Get out of here. Though, you know, he does work for Channel 7, so more likely, in 6 months' time, what he'll be doing is he'll be ambushing these kids with a camera crew and chasing them down the street, asking why they think they're above the law. These kids either got around it or weren't impacted by it all because, and I'm not sure if people know this about teenagers lie a lot. Almost none of them are over 18, and pretty much all of them have watched porn at some point. And this is despite our best efforts, despite our honor system tick boxes that stop them only if they admit to a tick box that they won't be accountable to if they lie, that they are not over 18. It seriously feels like this will only impact the kids who need it the least. The honest kids, the honest ones who didn't lie about their ages and are unlikely to get themselves in trouble online or be a target of trouble online anyway. So really, it's just punishment for the well-behaved. In a term that you could only describe as inevitable as an M. Night Shyamalan writing a twist into a film, apps that were not named in the social media ban immediately became the most downloaded on the App Store charts. Julie Grant, the eSafety Commissioner, has said teenagers slipping through the cracks of social media ban will be booted off in time, attributing the misses to platforms' late implementation. Certainly, is this not the last minute ramming through of the legislation without a proper study of how it could be achieved, or the last minute umming and ahhing about which platforms will even be included when it does come in, which is still continuing now, weeks after it has come into effect. Certainly that isn't the issue. Though, to be fair, most legal documents end up getting amended down the road. Even the American Bill of Rights, which, if popular consensus is to be believed, is the single greatest document that has ever been written, had to be amended as it missed a couple of important things like the abolition of slavery, women's rights to vote, presidential term limits, though I hear that one is about to be removed anyway, so mistakes were made. Grant said teens who got through would be pretty bored soon. And I'll grant you, an eternity of hanging out with boomers and politicians does sound pretty fucking awful, but I think she's missing the important point here that part of the reason that we are even trying to ban them is the addictive nature of social media. I'm sure many addicts are bored with their drug of choice after a while, but by then, they're addicted and they aren't doing it for fun anymore. In a video address, Anthony Albanese encouraged teens to make the most of their school holidays coming up rather than spending it scrolling on your phone. You know, start a new sport, learn a new instrument, or read a book that's been sitting there on your shelf for some time. Which, let me put this as delicately as I can, Albo. Fuck you! Fuck you! These kids already have summer reading lists. They hear this shit from their parents all the time. They don't need the PM going on the news on a medium that they don't even watch, only to hear lectures about how to spend their spare time. But I'll tell you this, someone has been doing some reading, and this has led to Reddit filing a high court challenge to the teen social media ban, contending that the law is unconstitutional and that its platform has been wrongly included. This sort of thing coming from Reddit is 100% the most Reddit thing that has ever happened. The platform that is the home of pedantry and obsessive deep dives has found a pedantic deep dive into the Constitution and has found something you might be interested in. According to the filing, Reddit has asked the court for two things: to declare the law invalid and that it should not apply to Reddit. Which, guys, if you think it through, if the law is invalid, it wouldn't apply to any platform, would it now? Classic Reddit, just hyper-focused on yourself. It argues that the ban infringes upon Australia's implied freedom of political expression by restricting, for example, teens from engaging in political discussion on its platform. Those of us who have lived here long enough will know Australia doesn't have an explicit freedom of speech like America, but the High Court has long held that our Australian Constitution implies a freedom to communicate on political and government matters. So not bad, eh? Not bad. Small-time country does good. The social media ban blocks a whole class of Australians, all young people, each and every one of them, no matter their circumstances, from the very online spaces where news is consumed, representatives are contacted, campaigns are organised, and public debate occurs. Evidence on the record shows teens overwhelmingly use social platforms, with many getting their news there. And admittedly, this can be an issue as channels 7, 9, 10, and Sky News are all also on social media. And that sort of rot will destroy a kid's brain faster than Coca-Cola destroys a tooth. The burden falls hardest on young people with a disability or First Nations children, rural and remote youth, and LGBTQIA+ teens, who face heightened risks of isolation if cut off from these networks that are in fact lifelines. Removing accounts risks isolation and worsens inequality of access to public debate. If bans drive circumvention, like the old school method of lying about your age and piling three kids into a trench coat and speaking with a deeper voice, or newer methods like VPNs and Groucho Marx glasses and mustaches. These push teens into less safe corners of the internet and, in fact, reducing oversight and increasing harm. If kids were to have kids' accounts, like the ones that YouTube specifically created for kids a decade ago to address this very issue, then they couldn't access the absolute worst materials on the internet. That'll be a horror that they unwrap on their 18th birthday when they leave school and the world starts to treat them in that particular way that only the world can. At the moment, the worst that they'd be exposed to on a kid's account is Cocomelon. So their brain might turn into some sort of garbled mash of incomprehensible babbling, but at least they won't be exposed to the likes of Andrew Tate. the longer we can keep them from accessing that particular brand of misogynistic slop, the better. Funnily enough, one of the secret reasons that they don't want kids on social media is because it brings them content that reinforces that the government has fucked up the world around them and that they need to band together to protest. And that might be the very thing that takes down this ban. How will they stop kids from believing in progress and Greens policies and that they deserve a future that isn't both underwater and on fire at the same time if they are allowed to go on social media unmonitored, huh? Huh? That brings us to the end of the actual episode. Thank you so much for hanging around. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope this speaks to you. If you think you know someone who would enjoy this kind of content, do share it with them. On all the social media platforms, you can find a version of some of these jokes. Do share it with them. Feel free to jump on the Patreon if you want to get access to our bonus episode, which today is all about redacted news. So you can probably guess what that refers to. So if you want to hear some lukewarm takes on that, then you go over to the Patreon, sign up, join on one of the tiers, and access your bonus stories. Until then, my friends, until then, I will see you later. Look after yourselves. Goodbye.